This is the Management 291 podcast, Surviving Organizational Behavior, produced by governanceproject.org.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Anthony, and welcome to a special coronavirus crisis episode of the Management 291 podcast series.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what's been dominating the news recently? It is just one subject.
Nothing else.
And as we'd like to try and scan the press to see what issues could be applicable to what we're discussing in class, which this week is culture and structure, organizational culture and structure, this is an important issue, how to deal with these kind of issues, these kind of problems that get chucked at us.
That's right. And this coronavirus or COVID-19 story is quickly moving from a headline to something that's actually being actively discussed in organizations this week and becoming concrete for employees and leadership.
Yeah, you were just mentioning that you've received some instructions from your employer.
That's right. So effective immediately, no more non-essential travel. And any travel to affected areas, you are asked to self-quarantine for 14 days. So quite a few changes, a lot of meetings being rescheduled, important events being shifted, and probably some even cancelled.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's this kind of planning aspect to it, which doesn't necessarily come natural to people unless you've actually prepared yourself in advance. And that's where we get into the subject about, well, what should organizations do in terms of being ready to face unexpected challenges?
For something like this, people obviously play a key role. So human resources is going to be one of the major areas where we need to focus. The second one is operations. What's happening has a huge impact on operations. And you might understand operations differently depending on the context. If you're running a factory, you know, you may not have enough workers or you may not be getting the raw materials in because of stoppages or shortages. You may also be running, you know, a relatively small business consulting firm, which doesn't have the same type of production needs, but you may very well experience similar challenges. Can your employees get to work? Will they be impacted? What's happening with your clients?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, in offices, in the knowledge industries, if you like, very quickly the human resources elements start blending in towards the process management elements, but they're slightly different. As you said, for factories and manufacturing, managing your supply routes and in fact your distribution networks in a situation of disruption, in this case COVID-19, but could equally be that there's climate change related events. I mean, if you had factories in Australia in the middle of the zones where you had all the fires, or as we've seen in the past as well, in the event of natural catastrophes such as tsunamis and so forth, if you don't have an eye on where is it that your supply chains can be disrupted and what are your options in the event they do, you're going to be caught.
And I think typically in industries which are, you know, providing a critical service or are industrial in any nature, they've thought of or they've had to anticipate most of these things, you know, whether it's strikes, disruptions, you know, the kinds of countries they're operating in, you know, they are to some extent used to this and so have the, you know, have already set up the redundancies, the alternative supply sources, and have a certain amount of stock. So I think businesses in those kinds of industries or those kinds of geographies probably are a little bit better prepared. Coronavirus is one where I think it really underscores the importance of looking at this from an HR perspective.
Mm-hmm. Because it is principally going to be something that impacts people in your organization. As you said, in terms of operational process logistics, any company should be quite aware of the possibilities of disruptions to their supply chains for whatever reason over time and should be organized appropriately. The trouble with the coronavirus situation is that in this particular case, we don't know how long it's going to go on for.
Yeah.
It's not like the same as a natural catastrophe where you know there's maybe 6 months or even 12 months of disruption and then it's finished, it's going to be repaired or you're going to have found other alternatives. Here we're talking about really managing expectations and concerns over a longer period, including something which I don't hear talked about very much, it's your client reactions. How are your clients going to be reacting in a crisis situation? So if you're running a restaurant, for example, are suddenly you going to lose all your clients because they won't come to a restaurant, full stop? Or are you suddenly going to face unexpected boosts in demand for your products, like for face masks, and you're not ready for it? You're going to have to at least be aware of what can change and how drastically things can change quickly.
And to the extent that you're faced with surprise challenges, are you equipped to deal with them in the current context? So if you produce face masks and there's a sudden surge, given the current context, do you have extra employees that you can bring in? Likely not, because we're more in a mode of segregating and isolating. Similarly, if you run a restaurant and your spike in demand drops, do you have flexible arrangements with your employees to prevent, you know, major financial losses from having to pay, you know, salaries when there's no demand?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it's just interesting. I just sort of pulled something from the internet this morning. A few questions that employers and employees have been asking themselves, and I think this applies to anyone in the knowledge or the service business. You know, can an employer prohibit an employee from making a private trip to a high-risk area? Very good question. Can an employee refuse to meet with a client who's recently traveled to a high-risk area? You know, what are the consequences of that? And these are the kinds of practical questions that I think people are starting to ask themselves.
Yeah, these are good questions that need to be answered, but you're not going to be able to do that as a knee-jerk reaction. These are things that you need to, at the very least, have a fundamental understanding within the company, within the executive, within the board, as to how to discuss these things. Because if you're just getting worried and scared yourself, and you're not calm and routined in having these discussions, the answers to these kind of questions can go all over the place. So you've really got to think about what is actually best for the long-term interests of the company and the long-term interests of our stakeholders, including our employees.
And employees are the first to notice a lack of planning or preparation at an executive level, and they're the first to notice a knee-jerk reaction,
yeah.
Especially with something like this. They're comparing with their peers, with their families, what's happening at your employer, what's going on over here, how are you managing this? So it's very important that these are well thought out and, most importantly, communicated in a clear and professional way.
Yeah, we've already segued directly into human resources concerns and measures that need to be taken. As you said, people are fearful and they will need information. They'll be looking for leadership, no doubt, which means that communications is an absolutely key thing. I mean, you've got to be in control. You've got to know how are you going to, one, make sure that you're obtaining the right kind of information that you need to be able to make decisions about policies and response. And you're going to have to be able to give clear and confident instructions in order to maintain confidence amongst your staff. If they feel that you are running around like a headless chicken, they will be scared and it'll be very strange reactions going on for sure. If they feel that you have this, you've got it under control, there'll be a lot more confidence. They will say, they've got this under control. We trust them and we will do as they say, basically. But you've got to come across as caring for the stakeholders. You've got to come across as caring for the employees. And I think, to be honest, you've got to actually also, in the context of stakeholder management, you've got to maintain a good communication line with your suppliers, your distribution outlets, your partners in the business, because you're going to have to take some tough choices.
And, you know, while you're communicating and trying to manage this as best as possible, you should also be running, you know, from a regular management perspective, parallel planning. You should understand what the impacts to your business are if you were to lose 20% of your staff, 40% of your staff, 60% of your staff. And you should be planning for that in addition to all of the work that you're doing out front with your employees.
Mm-hmm. So how can we reassure employees, Michael, in terms of taking the pressure off them in terms of their worries?
I think the key one is communicate clearly and communicate often. In a case like this, there's a lot of noise. The facts about the COVID-19 seem to sort of change every few days on the news. Mm-hmm. Employees are hearing a lot.
There's a lot of fake news out there.
Yes,
about it too.
Yes, and they need to hear consistent messaging, and they need to hear it often. Probably more often than the average manager would think is even necessary if we want that to be effective.
Yeah, and I think you also need to think about how you can actually project that you physically have things under control. I mean, for example, to consider in this particular instance of coronavirus, we know that increased sanitary conditions is something which is important to help reduce the spread, right? So just having some, for example, doubling up a little bit on the cleaning staff, that they go around cleaning door handles and so forth visibly, are the kind of things that can show employees that management is actually taking it seriously and that they've got clear policies in place as to who should be maybe working from home, what will happen if you suddenly feel ill at work, even setting up facilities for sick rooms in the event of someone perhaps needing to be quarantined, but then in a very sort of pleasant and hospitable way rather than some scary cupboard that you're going to shove people into.
Exactly. And so I think in order to do this with some level of credibility and leadership, you need to have the right structure in place to deal with this. So we talked earlier about a plan. Larger, more sophisticated organizations would have a pandemic outbreak plan, action plan, that they would be hopefully pulling off the shelf right about now and assigning roles and responsibilities. But you know, even if you don't already have that, you need to structure this. Who's going to, you know, who are the key decision makers on this topic? Who will be in charge of communication? And how will leadership ensure that they are capturing the concerns of employees, clients, and suppliers on a regular, probably daily, basis in a case like this?
Yeah, here you really need to avoid any situation where you have too many cooks in the kitchen, right? You need to have a clear person who's responsible and somebody who has the authority and the power to coordinate others. A single spokesperson, a single point of decision as to what's going to happen, who's going to do what. I think, but you can't do that on the fly. It has to be something that you prepare for well in advance of crisis, which means it's important that you actually set up contingency units and contingency plans, but keep them alive by regular practice, by regular drills, so that you can deal with things. We have fire drills, procedures with very exact outcomes, very exact instructions, what to do, where to gather, where to exit, and so forth. But that's for a simple emergency. For many of these kind of unexpected or unknown types of crises, they'll be much more complex. A coronavirus crisis is clearly one that is complex. And for that, you need a different kind of mentality than one that just says, the fire alarm's gone off, everyone get up, leave your stuff, walk out of the building. This is something where you need people to coordinate their reactions in a much more calm and longer term manner.
And I think, you know, appreciating everyone's busy during a time like this, but as a leader, this is certainly the time to reach out to your peers in the industry and to take the pulse of what others are doing. Why? Well, because this is a challenging situation, and it's I think good to understand whether your actions are similar to others. It's also reassuring to employees to be able to demonstrate that the company is taking this very seriously, but is also in step with what other leading companies are doing in this area. I think that's particularly reassuring. And if I just look back at the last few days, there were a first few companies that started to ask staff who'd been traveling in an affected area to stay at home for 2 weeks. And you know, it was clear that the first one or two employers, that was a bit of a challenging position to take. But sort of over the last 48 hours, this is now very quickly, at least here in Luxembourg, becoming standard. And that's providing a level of comfort to employees.
As we mentioned, in knowledge industries, it's much easier to make that arrangement as well, of course, because you can work from home very often. Maybe not quite as effectively as if you're in the office and you're all going to the meetings together, but you can still work pretty effectively from home as well. And certainly you can set yourself up so that that is possible.
And as
do you have enough laptops, for example, to enable people to log on?
And as a manager, I think you're probably going to have to factor that in. You know, if you send everyone home to work, there's probably going to be a 25% dip in productivity. So it's about also reshifting some of the deliverables and priorities now, with especially clients, and adapting those to suit, you know, the current reality.
Mm-hmm. I think. You know, what we're talking about in class is about organizational structure and how that links into organizational culture. And we're already talking about having the right kind of mindset at work and the right kind of approach from the leadership. Crises are stressful times, no doubt about it. I think it's quite clear that a culture where people trust each other and where there is an openness to talk about things is a culture which will be less fearful than one that does not have that present. And I think a lot of things that we've talked about in terms of organizational culture in the past come to the fore here. Do you have an organization where people feel free to express themselves, free to speak up, free to express their concerns and worries? And do you have a structure in the organization, a social capital networking that allows people to get together in an appropriate manner to make those discussions effective and efficient.
And that's right, because in something like this really demonstrates that, of course, you can have a great plan, and no doubt a great plan and an effective hierarchical structure will certainly help you. But that social capital that you're referring to, you know, there are going to be dozens of things that haven't been thought of in something like this. And we're really going to be relying on that, on employees to come up with solutions and be creative. And it's going to make a huge difference.
It is. And I think it's quite interesting to think about that if you're talking about dealing with complex responses, the way in which you've set up your organization will impact the way employees behave quite drastically. If you have a very hierarchical and a more centralized kind of organization, it's going to be conducive to encourage passive employee behavior, where people will sit back and wait for things to happen to them. They will wait for instructions. They won't move out of place until you tell them to move out of place. Whereas if you have an organization which is more flat, which is more distributed power oriented in the sense of you're empowering and trusting your workforce, and where a workforce is guided by clear values and not so many procedures, but more guidelines or guardrails as to what is the right way to resolve issues and problems and challenges that they face, you're going to have a much more proactive workforce as a result. In other words, people will actually seek out to find the most sensible solution to confront the challenge that they're being faced with.
And I think that productivity dip is going to be a lot lower in that kind of a scenario, for sure.
So I think one thing that we did mention, we said communications was really important, and we did mention that, you know, getting the right kind of information in and getting the right kind of information out was actually, let's say, key success elements in managing a crisis such as this. But you need to make sure that you've got the right network to be able to allow that to happen. I think what is really important is that you're able not only, if you have a workforce that is proactive in defining and finding solutions, you've got to make sure that you have a very good coordinating information network that allows you to get bottom-up information up to the leadership so you don't have people running off in different directions. In some of the crises that I've been involved in, as you know, I'm previously got a compliance background, but in one of the crises that we were involved in, we actually found that the best department in terms of actually maintaining an overall communication flow was the compliance department. Now, I'm not saying that's always going to be a compliance department that does that, but we were basically set up in such a way that we were getting early warnings and red alerts on any kind of compliance problem or ethical issue throughout the whole global operation of our company. That served really well in a chaotic situation when the businesses were all trying to figure out in each their corner what to do. That kind of internal control environment allowed us to get a much more higher quality regular feedback from what was going on in all the countries that we were operating in. Might not always be compliance, it could be operational risk management, for example, but some instance it would be very good to figure out which are the units in our organization that actually we could maybe charge with in an emergency to maintain the highest level of feedback as to what's going on in the periphery.
And then critical to success there is, does leadership understand that that is a quality source of information and listen to it in a time of crisis? So that's, you know, if you spend 3 days looking to, you know, for where to get the right information, that's time lost already.
Yeah. That's things you have to identify up front.
So like anything else, practice makes perfect. Even, I think, with a predefined plan and a defined company structure, a hierarchy, and even with a good environment, a good social capital, this is something you still need to work on, because the fact of the matter is these events are exceptional. Mm-hmm. They are stressful. They involve a number of, you know, unknowns, and they're difficult to deal with. So learning to cope as an organization with this or natural disasters or anything else is actually a skill. It's a deliverable, and it's something that organizations need to practice regularly.
Yeah, and I think it needs everybody on deck, which means that you've got the board members and the executive, the management, and you have the staff in general. You've got three different elements here that need to come together and work together. And you've got to make sure that before the crisis hits, you have practiced how to sort out those discussions as to who's going to be responsible for what. is the board and the chair going to take control? Are we going to just say, look, the chief executive is the best person placed to sort this out, leave it all to that person? And are you going to be able to get the input that you need from all the staff and get their support as well? So you need to actually have ways of running practice drills on how to deal with different kinds of crises, which should be possible, especially at the board and executive level. But that relationship between the board and management can become absolutely critical in terms of dealing with a crisis efficiently or inefficiently. So if you start having a debate going on between the board and the management, for example, and you get all the power dynamics coming to that, that's a huge distraction. It can be very destructive.
No, that's right. That's something that needs to be sorted out. And, you know, one of the benefits of doing a practice drill is having also the courage to look at the results after and talk about what went well and what didn't go well, and suggest different ways of working.
Yeah, there's something called a board assessment, which is something which regulated firms in Europe are required to do basically annually, where the board will assess the boardroom dynamics, the relationships that they have between each other and that they have with management on a regular basis. I had someone ask me the other day, how do you keep that alive? How do you keep that interesting for the people who take part in it? Well, I think we've got one example here, which is basically discuss in a crisis situation, such as a health panic, how do our dynamics work together in that? How to assess our board in that context? I think that can add something color and add interest and life to the debate. So, Michael, I think we've tried to run through quite quickly, I think, a number of the things. We've focused on the needs to be ready from an operational perspective, which is something which is a little bit based on logistics and, you know, where your supply chains and where your distribution outlets and so forth, how you're going to deal with that in any kind of crisis. That's a technical one. The dealing with the people side is a lot more complicated. And we talked about communications, the need to provide proper leadership so that the employees feel safe and they feel they can rely and trust the leadership. And we talked about getting all of your contingency plans up ready, well in advance, and to keep practicing them on a live basis, that you're not sort of just taking them, the plans, off a dusty shelf once every 10 years.
So hopefully something less exciting next week, Anthony. Yeah.
Don't let a good crisis go to waste.
All right.
Take
See
care.
You next week.
See you. Bye.
That was the Management 291 podcast with Michael Schweiger and Anthony Smith-Meyer. Music by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. Thank you for listening.